Good morning. I'm going to call the Tax Committee, and I appreciate that everybody is waiting. We're waiting for duplicating, and it's my fault because I didn't prepare to have this ready, and we're just waiting for someone to run something in from duplicating. And then Mr. Michael is going to just walk through a jobs bill that I put out. We posted it online and put it out publicly a long time ago, so we're hoping everyone who's here has seen it. But we just want to make sure if you haven't seen it, you have a copy of it today, and so that members can look at it. And as soon as we get that, we're going to have Mr. Michael just walk through these TIF provisions that I had put out there for some early language to help with job creation. So we really appreciate everyone being here to just sort of give direction to what we were trying to do today. And many of you got either personal calls from me or from members of staff or from associations you're part of to ask you to come forward and tell us if you have projects that are close to development, if you could tell us what they are. We're really trying to do our best to put people to work. What we're not trying to do today is ask people to change economic development policy for the state of Minnesota in a long-term manner. That would be the work of this committee in an omnibus tax bill situation or Representative Rukavina's committee. And so we're not looking for great ideas that we would permanently change forever. We are trying to put people to work immediately as a recession strategy for job creation. So we're most interested in hearing about things that are close to being ready to go and that we can assist you with. So we want to just have you come and tell us that, but we're still waiting for language. And I don't know, Mr. Michael, if you want to try without the draft language in front of you to initially walk through what the various proposals were in the bill I introduced, or if Charlie wants to go check with duplicating as to why we don't have a copy for Mr. Michael. Looks like he's coming right now. Dave, thank you. We're just going to appreciate that. Okay. So if Mr. Michael could, for committee members and for the public, walk us through some of the proposals that would be designed to help with job creation and tax increment financing, and then if the rest of the copies are coming. So we'll get those as soon as we've got them. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are four tax increment provisions in House File 2695, the Chair's Jobs Bill. And I'll just very quickly and briefly go through the nature of them. Two of these provisions were passed by either the House or the Senate last year, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. The one the Senate passed was, I think it was heard in this committee, but there was not a lot of discussion of it. But that's the first one. This is authorization for a new type of tax increment financing district called the Compact Development Districts. Essentially, these districts are required to meet the coverage test for redevelopment districts, but not the blight test. But then, in order to qualify, they have to increase the amount of buildings by three times. Now, when this bill is heard, there's likely to be a technical amendment to this to prevent it from having some potentially unintended consequences. So that's one of the provisions. The second provision that was passed by the Senate last year was considered in conference committee but was not adopted. The second set of provisions that passed this committee and the full House last year as part of the omnibus tax bill were a set of changes that Representative Mullery proposed for housing replacement districts, which is a special law that applies to a number of cities. What this would have done is given housing replacement authority to two new cities, Brooklyn Park and St. Paul, and added more parcels for existing cities and given them more flexibility to use that authority. This authority is largely used to replace sort of substandard housing by capturing the taxes from that housing on a parcel-by-parcel basis throughout those cities that have that authority. And there are parcel caps on that, and those parcel caps would be increased and they'd be given more flexibility in how quickly they can use that authority. There are two other provisions that were not passed before. Let me say the other thing is that compact development district would be sunsetted. So it would be done on an experimental basis. after 2 years. The other two provisions are to allow expanded use of economic development districts let me see if I can find the provision so I can get my dates correct on this. And that essentially what that would allow, under, just as a matter of background, under current law, economic development districts may only be used for manufacturing, research and development, warehousing, and in a few counties, tourism. What this would do is it would open it up back to the way the law was before 1988 and allow economic development districts to be used essentially for any kind of commercial development. But in order to qualify for that, the construction would have to begin no later than July 1 of 2011. So essentially this would open it up to office projects and other kinds of commercial projects. The fourth and last provision is expanded authority for cities to use what are typically called excess or surplus increments. Under current law, there are very strict restrictions on what's called pooling and the five-year rule that sort of says you can't use more than a given percentage. Usually it's 25%, 20% for economic development districts outside of the geographic area of that district for a period of a year and a half, 18 months. Basically that restriction would be lifted and cities would be allowed to use any of that increment that they had available to encourage new developments to happen. If the, you know, again, if the construction can start before July 1 of 2011, and this is written expansively so that the city actually could, in certain circumstances, make sort of take equity positions in these developments if that's what they believe is necessary to get construction to start. But again, both of these last two provisions are temporary provisions, and it's contingent on construction starting by July 1 of 2011.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Other questions for Mr. Michael before we get started? Okay, so I know there were a number of people who contacted us, and whoever would like to start, please come forward. The copies are coming now. We're going to get these copies to committee members and then to the public as they are printed. And members, you know, what we've done in the tax committee for years is we've had a subcommittee of the tax committee decide on TIF recommendations, and then we've put it in the tax bill with the permission of the tax committee. The intention here would be to do something different, is get it out there with all committee members, and so I know a lot of committee members aren't that interested in tax increment financing. So this might be the day that you learn something that you didn't know before, and you might get interested, because I know the few of us who've worked on this a lot on this committee are always trying to recruit more of you. Right, Representative Lanning? We like more members to start getting involved with tax increment financing and understanding what the issues are as it relates to this policy. But the intent here would be, and I obviously can't make this commitment yet on behalf of the majority, but we're trying to get an early jobs bill out. That's the goal here. This would not be all the regular garden variety TIF bills that would go on the omnibus tax bill. This wouldn't be people who need little tweaks for their TIF item. This would be an early jobs bill. This would go run ahead of the normal omnibus tax bill process, where working with Commissioner Innes and Senator Bach in the Senate, we would attempt to come to an agreement with the governor's office on a proposal of tax-related items that assist in job creation as an early strategy ahead of the omnibus tax bill. So that's why we really want the full tax committee engaged on TIF provisions. So we're now going to hear from cities and developers and others who may want to give us some input into this process. Representative Mowry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe for Mr. Michael, you said the construction had to start. My concern is we're trying to get the work done, and having represented small developers before, sometimes the construction started but not much was really done for 2 years or more afterwards, and I'm concerned that the whole purpose of this seems to be to try to get a lot of people to work quick, and that would be a problem if it's real loose, I would think.
And I don't know if we're asking Mr. Michael or me something. Oh, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I think that's something the committee would want to look at to make sure that this is not just a sort of camel's nose under the tent kind of a thing, but that there's substantial construction, so you can't do a de minimis amount of activity and then qualify. So, but, I mean, one of the difficulties with all of this is that in order for a city to go ahead and authorize this sort of thing, it's going to have to do it on sort of the good faith, belief that that's actually going to happen. But, yes, it might be good to put standards into the law so that it's not just a very de minimis amount of, earth moving or something like that. That would qualify under this, under these exceptions.
And members, again, I think members who have been following this for a while know, I'm not a big fan of this stuff, and I'm trying to stretch and be really flexible, but the goal here is, as Representative Mullery is saying, this is not to rewrite economic development policy forever. It is a short-term recession strategy that would end. And so that's why we're trying to hear, are there projects out there? Are there developments out there? Not, if you change all the rules and you provide all this looseness again that existed back in the 80s, which I don't support, we could maybe then get a developer. That's really not what we're trying to do. We're trying to help projects that are close go. So, this is what the committee needs to hear from all of you as to kind of what is your situation. And it'll be up to this committee to decide if there would be site-specific projects or overall policies, but the idea would be to get this bill done ahead of the omnibus tax bill process, which would be rare indeed for the tax committee. So we welcome all of you, and we want to hear what's on your mind. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I'm just going to do a quick introduction. This is I'm from Sauk Rapids. This is my city administrator and my economic development. And Sauk Rapids is a true success story. Several years ago, we put in the bridge there, and there was some major redevelopment that took place. These individuals have been pioneers in making this thing work, and if you ever get a chance to come to Sauk Rapids, take a look at the old pictures and the new pictures. There's a dynamic difference. It's been a true success story, and I think what they're going to share with you is how we can keep that going.
Madam Chair, good introduction there. My name is Ross Olson. I'm the City Administrator with the City of Sauk Rapids. This is Todd Schultz. He's our Community and Economic Development Director, and we have a project, and we have a developer, and we can start it in 2011. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Todd Schultz. He's going to read some narrative that we have prepared. We've also distributed out to all the members here, and certainly when we're done, if we have enough time, we'd love to answer any questions that you might have.
I appreciate that. You're not going to read this to us, right?
If you prefer to go,
No, because we've all got it. And I think this committee, there's so many of us, we work better not being read to as a group. So, I prefer to just hear your comments.
Sure.
And kind of let us know more. We got the three big answers right there. You got a developer, you got a project, you could do it in 11. Yep. Now we'd like to know a little bit more about what that is and how would that fit into current TIF law.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, what a project is, as Representative Severson alluded to at the introduction, a new bridge was built in the city of Sauk Rapids that opened in 2007. Completely changed the dynamic of our downtown. It changed locations from where the old bridge was located. And in doing that, it kind of inadvertently put the block that City Hall is located and our police station on really what I guess I would consider the prime corner in our downtown. We're at one of the four corners where the bridge is currently touching down. What that has meant is that, obviously our corner now is highly desirable for development. And we have been approached by somebody. We certainly haven't been out actively marketing our corner, but we've been approached by a developer who has made us an extremely generous offer for our block. It is approximately four times market value for our downtown. It would offer us the opportunity to put a really nice commercial building on this corner where folks are entering into our city. The problem is even with the offer being four times market rate, the city would still have to bond in order to build a new police station, city hall, somewhere else in the downtown. What we are offering as a solution to that is that we have a TIF district, TIF District 4. It's a pre-90 district. It's generating approximately $1.2 million a year. If we had the ability to extend the life of that district for 1 or 2 years, we would have the ability to do this project without having to bond and create more debt for our taxpayers. That's our project in a nutshell.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm going to just quick ask, how many people want to testify in the audience? Can you raise your hand? A lot. Okay, so we want to move quickly. We appreciate hearing from you. Representative Severson, thank you. And you know, you should know, as representatives of Stock Rapids, your testimony is here. It'll be part of the record. We've all got it. And thank you for that. I know Representative Lanning, Reinert, and Demmer have worked on this proposal with this city in the past and have done some. And so now this is a new piece. And so we, any information you could have to get to Mr. Michael, we're interested in getting that. So thank you. Really appreciate you being here. Others, please.
Good morning.
Yes, welcome.
My name is Abraham Algari. I'm the city administrator for the city of Pine Island. And with me is John Eichhoff, finance director for the city. We do have a project. I think you've heard of it before. It's called Elk Run Bioscience Park. The Elk Run Bioscience Park encountered a little bit of a problem here this year. We realized that the 50 acres that we put into the Tax Increment Financing District 1-12 were under the Green Acres provision. And the Green Acres...
You didn't have to bring that up, did you?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw a curveball here, but... Much of what we've done is in line with the third provision, frankly, in the proposed bill. We ran into a little problem. Biotechnology centers and bioscience in general is R&D intensive, and under the Green Acres, research and development is excluded from being one of the eligible uses. So what we're trying to do is see if something could be done right away, possibly under, again, the third provision in the bill. In the proposed bill that says research and development is an eligible use. That's all.
Okay. Questions, members, for Mr. Algari. Is that correct? And is it? Can you tell us your name for the
John Eichhoff.
John Eichhoff. Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when would construction actually commence if this were granted?
We are awaiting the filing the building permit on April 21st. I believe that's a day after the ground thaws. Is that what it is? On the 21st of April. This year.
Okay. So if we're understanding this correctly, just for members to get their heads around this.
Yeah.
If you're in Green Acres, you can't do economic development. So you're saying we want to have a new wrinkle for Green Acres, and we want to be allowed to do economic development and still retain our Green Acres status on the parcel for property tax purposes. Is that right?
No.
No. Okay.
That's not the case. The farmer that owned this land has sold it to the developer years ago. We're in the five-year rules under the TIF. That you can only develop a TIF there if it's used for distribution and manufacturing.
Okay.
We would like to expand those uses to also R&D.
Okay. Are you working with a legislator?
We're working with you right now.
Yeah. Okay. Representative, thank you. Just, you know, because in any information you can get to Mr. Michael would be helpful. Representative Leaving.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the presenters. But maybe I missed this, but what I didn't hear is what is this going to cause to happen in terms of development that isn't already scheduled to happen? I mean, I know you'd like to have it be a little more economically favorable, but... You know, I mean, is there something that you don't have planned now that would be starting or starting earlier or something if we were to make this change?
Mr. Algari or Mr. Eichhoff, please.
Madam Chair, the full bioscience area is 250 acres. This 50 acres initially set is the land closest to the city services and already has water and sewer to it, is already ready to go. The base for the road is already done through this portion. The acres beyond do not fall under the Green Acres provisions, but the acres that are ready to be built on immediately were previously in Green Acres. What it does, it allows the buildings that were set for that area to be expanded, more buildings built than anticipated in that area, because those plats are already ready versus the further away acres are not.
If I may, just with a quick follow-up, Representative Liebling, the jobs or the prospective developers and job entrepreneurs, if you will, that will create the jobs that we're talking to right now, we're consciously excluding R&D, if you will. If this provision was to be relaxed, at least on a temporary basis, we can expand the circle of entrepreneurs we're talking to include research and development within the first 50 acres biotech park.
Okay. Representative Broad, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering from Mr. Michael, what was the purpose of the exclusion from the outset? You know, it seems R&D is pretty reasonable, but...
Ms. Baker, someone on Green Acres and R&D?
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, this is a tax increment provision that Representative Osmond put into the bill, and I think Representative Osmond's idea initially was that if property is in Green Acres, cities ought not to be sort of using tax increment to encourage development of that property. It was the usual conflict between policies, mm-hmm. where it's like Green Acres is there to preserve ag land and keep it in ag land, and then if you use tax increment to develop that land, it seemed like state policies were pushing against one another. He initially had an outright prohibition, and of course he got pushback from a number of people that had ideas and projects, and generally they were sympathetic to manufacturing, and so they carved out exceptions for manufacturing and certain kinds of housing. And I think, I'm not sure exactly why R&D was never put in there, but I'm guessing Representative Osmond probably would have been as sympathetic to R&D as he would have been to manufacturing and warehousing. But that's sort of the institutional history behind this provision.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And any information you can provide is helpful.
Thank you.
Welcome.
No. Madam Chair and members, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Coordinator for the City of Minneapolis. In preparing for this discussion, we had a roundtable last week with developers asking them what is important to get your projects off the ground. And in having that discussion, we talked about TIF. And one of the developers says, I already have TIF, but I still can't get it off the ground. Others said, I don't use TIF because in the city of Minneapolis, when it comes to commercial buildings, we don't use tax increment financing economic development. However, TIF is important, and we would use some of these tools if the right development came along. However, as part of our discussion, we heard the word, this is a different time. And Rick Collins is with me today, and Rick is the contractor on both of these projects. Both of these projects are ready to go. One is a transit-oriented development along Hiawatha Corridor. It's a housing project. Another is a commercial development along in uptown in Minneapolis. They both, I think, could get started before 2/11, and Mr. Collins can tell you what some of the obstacles are. Mr. Collins has done an awful lot of development with Ryan throughout the region and in our city.
Thank you, Mr. Ranieri. Welcome, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Rick Collins. I'm with Ryan Companies. I'm also a Bloomington citizen, and I serve as a commissioner on the Bloomington Port Authority, so I sometimes see development issues from both sides. I'm here to talk about two specific projects, and I'm joined today by Stu Ackerberg of the Ackerberg Group and Dale Joel of Capital Growth. And in this particular case, Ryan Companies is builder for both their projects. We've been working with each of them for more than a year. The Ackerberg Group has been working for several years on a project known as the Mosaic in Uptown. It's a $35 million office, restaurant, and parking project, fully entitled. The land is owned. The market will support it in Uptown, and so there's no public financing of any type involved in this project, and the significant challenge is obtaining construction financing at anything greater than about 50% loan to value. Is loan to value a term that many of you understand? That's the percentage of debt as compared to the total value of the project. And 2 years ago, I would say that loan to value would have routinely been available in the 75 or 80%. Today, it's more like 50%, and the banks want additional collateral in addition to that. Capital Growth and Dale Joel have been working for several years on Longfellow Station, and that's a 196-unit housing project, as Gene mentioned, on the Hiawatha Corridor in Minneapolis. Small amount of retail, $39 million in total. In this particular case, 40% of the housing units are affordable, and for that reason, the City of Minneapolis has worked very closely with the developer to obtain $9 million of public financing in the form of Metropolitan Council, Hennepin County, and City of Minneapolis grants and low-interest loans. And the city has also provided an extra $3.5 million worth of tax increment financing. Notwithstanding all the public support for this project and the fact that it, again, is fully entitled and ready to go, it suffers from the same thing, the lack of construction financing. Dale Joel and his team tried to sell bonds into a failing bond market about 18 months ago, then shifted about 12 months ago to pursuing HUD financing, which is basically the only game in town for residential development right now, and has been unsuccessful so far in obtaining HUD financing. You asked us here to testify about TIF. One of the things that I would say is while TIF, and I've been a user of tax increment to support various projects I've been involved in, like the Grain Belt Brew House and Midtown Exchange, the former Sears in Minneapolis, tax increment is not a one-size-fits-all kind of solution. And in this particular case, in fact, before I go to solution, I want to address jobs also. The Mosaic Project, 280,000 construction hours. The Longfellow Station Project, 350,000 construction hours. So between the two of them, about 630,000 hours, or 310 laborer years, if you will. Some of those folks work on it for short periods of time. But the common denominator is the inability to get construction financing. TIF won't work unless we can get a project built, and we can't get these projects out of the ground. The most valuable tool, although this is the tax committee, the most valuable tool is some form of limited loan guarantee to help fill the gaps, similar to the way an SBA guarantee does for small banks and small businesses, to allow these developers to get their projects out of the ground. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, as would Mr. Joel and Mr. Ackerberg, about their projects. But we at least wanted to bring this forward to you and provide our input.
Questions, members? Representative Broad.
Thank you. And Mr. Collins, I'm just wondering, in regards to the loan to value, is that something that is a regulatory burden, or is that a burden in terms of risk that the banks are taking upon themselves in terms of the requirements that they're putting on you? Is this something that the feds are requiring?
Mr. Collins.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would say that we would think that it's the latter. It is the bank's underwriting guidelines. The banks would say that that's due in part to regulatory burdens they face in terms of reserved assets and other things that cause them to be far more conservative. But if you're looking for a short-term tool, again, 2 years ago, 80% loan-to-value was common, and my bet is 2 years from now, loan-to-value of 80% will again be common. But in the short term here, we can't fill the gap.
Okay, Representative Lothar, I should just say, Mr. Collins, as he stated, lives in Bloomington and works, you know, closely with the Mall of America project as a personal volunteer role in our city, and as a part of Ryan, of course, has been involved in lots of big projects in Minnesota and lots of small ones. So you mentioned the loan guarantee, so I just want to put that out here for a minute. You know, we heard that last year. The governor has stated he would veto that, and indeed the Senate also has not included it in their Metzen bill this year in recognition of that is probably not going anywhere. So that's part of the reason we wanted to focus on these other provisions, understanding, you know, no matter if people in this room are for or against it, it's not going anywhere. But did you happen to look in the language I had put out here on the TIF surplus increment? And, you know, we were kind of hoping, and granted, it's patchwork because some cities have surplus and some right. don't, so that's not fair, I get that, but it is a use. We were kind of hoping that some of the developers who, you know, obviously if you're just looking for your own city's interest, you want it in your city, but if you're looking statewide, as developers do, we were hoping that the excess increment, the surplus increment that was in the language would function as a small loan guarantee to add that final bridge in financing. Were you able to see, while maybe not particular to Longfellow and Mosaic, are you aware of any places that might take place in the state?
Madam Chair, first of all, we appreciate the opportunity to sit in front of you. Whether or not the provisions we're suggesting can be accomplished, we'd love your support. The city of Minneapolis does not have any excess TIF available to support the Mosaic or Longfellow Station. And I would say that if what you're looking for is short-term jobs, development is an experience that takes years to put together. And so I don't think what you'll see is a provision that passes that caused developers to look at new projects that they aren't already involved in. In this case, the developers both own the land. They're fully entitled. It would be very difficult to start from scratch and meet the time deadline suggested in the bill, notwithstanding the fact that there will be some cities that would be able to pool excess TIF.
And I think that's fair, and I appreciate that. And we are trying to target to getting stuff going immediately, so that is a weakness. I understand that. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Collins. I appreciate the fact that you bring a lot of experience and a lot of different projects. I'm wondering to what degree is the chill in the financing market also about, you know, the high, record high vacancy rates currently right now in the market in both housing and in commercial property, and whether redevelopment, do you think you've done some of those projects of existing properties that have vacancies, has a better chance, has better numbers in terms of rents and those sorts of things in competing for using these kind of tools?
Mr. Collins.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, first of all, both of these projects technically are redevelopment projects. In one case, it's taking down several large grain elevators, and in the other case, it's redeveloping what is a parking lot and a small structure in Uptown. I've also done several historic and adaptive reuse kind of projects, and those numbers are even more difficult to make, and I think you'll probably hear testimony from historic preservation folks. The markets, while they're very challenging, do not entirely shut off the possibility of development opportunities. Both of these developments are supported by very strong market studies. Uptown, the office market in Uptown is tighter than it is in downtown Minneapolis or in the suburban 494 corridor. In fact, one of the challenges is nobody reports office vacancy in Uptown. It's such a small market, but it's a very strong and healthy market. And the affordable housing market in the Hiawatha corridor, the demand is well supported by the market studies that have been commissioned by the developer. So apartment vacancies, I think you saw, are about 7.3% as reported recently. Office vacancies are in the high teens, but again, that's not in the Uptown area. That's where I'm laboring down in the 494 corridor. The developers are both bullish and would be putting substantial assets at risk if they were incorrect by moving forward. This is not a substitute for the developers taking risk. It's what we do all the time, and they're confident the markets are there.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question went back to the kind of the loan guarantee concept, and I understand, obviously, from your comments and others that it's not entirely a popular idea across the board. But I was wondering if the testifiers could to describe a program as you envision for loan guarantees and why you feel that would be a better avenue to go.
Mr. Collins.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I would say that we came with a concept more than a specific description. However, the way that the SBA loan works for small businesses is to provide a guarantee that is above, so that the SBA takes the first risk on the loan before the bank does. And so the first at risk in our particular case would be the developer's equity. That would always be the first at risk. The second slice would be some form of loan guarantee, and then the third slice would be the bank debt. So those banks who are appropriately conservative, I'm sure, would not feel unduly at risk by being able to meet their 50% loan to value. So if, in fact, these folks are both very close to 50%, they're probably already at the point with invested equity that they'd be between 60 and 70%. And so we're trying to get it down from that level to 50% to meet the banking requirements.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Welcome.
Chairman Chesky, members of the Tax Committee, my name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer with Larkin Hoffman. My day job or my night job, depending on what you think of me as, is to represent property owners and developers throughout Minnesota on various commercial, retail, and housing developments. And I can just tell you from my vantage point, as the others are confirming to you, that the speculative investment-based development market does not exist as we thought we knew it 3, 4, 5 years ago. It just doesn't exist. I want to talk very briefly about two projects that I'm working on that are, as the chair has indicated, ready to go. based on various approvals from their respective host cities. I want to be clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of those cities. I'm really here just to respond to the invitation to provide some ideas and some suggestions, but I want to use those two projects as context for my comments. The first is a major redevelopment project in the city of Wayzata. It's received all of its development entitlements. There's a TIF district in place, as Mr. Collins indicated, or maybe it was Mr. Ranieri. Even the TIF district by itself isn't enough to get us there. But it's a major redevelopment project in the core of the downtown area of Wayzata on Lake Minnetonka. It's a very exciting project, but there isn't any private capital available to help this project get off the ground, even though its primary development sponsor is a very well-respected, well-capitalized entity. The second project is a raw land project in the western suburbs. It's about 680 acres. It likewise has its development entitlements in hand from the city of Rogers. 680 acres. As a raw land site, it requires all of its public infrastructure improvements to be in place. And so it's a more challenging project from that standpoint. The concepts that I wanted to just share with you very briefly start with one that probably is familiar to many of you, and it's a concept called star bonds. It's another way to try to realize, potentially, new revenue sources and opportunities based on new development. And as you know, tourism for Minnesota is a strategic asset. We are unlike very many states that don't have the abundant natural resources that we have. And from my point of view, that's an opportunity that we are missing by not allowing communities and developers to try to formulate the equivalent of a tax increment district that's predicated on sales tax revenues that can be generated from new tourism, hospitality, from restaurants, from new entertainment venues, of what have you. I know they've been used in various iterations to support projects within the Twin Cities. I get that. What we don't have is a generalized policy that supports that for cities. And we think you at least ought to consider that option as a new way to try to spur development in the state. In addition, even as to TIF districts that are out there, having in mind your desire to do something stimulative in the short term, a couple of quick thoughts. Many projects, including my project in Wayzata, were started on the thought that they were going to be able to break ground last year, but couldn't get the financing to proceed. So they've got a TIF clock running already, even though they can't do anything with it. The extent to which the cities would have the authority to reset their TIF clocks, that would be a help for many communities that have TIF districts in place. In addition, there's a concept that Mr. Michael and Chair Lincheski know called the five-year rule that also serves as a limiting factor for communities that can't move forward on projects that are ready to go. And I would urge you to think about how you could modify that in the short term to provide some flexibility for communities using their own legislative discretion to decide whether some relief on that front would be appropriate. To the financeability question that was asked earlier by Representative Lewin, I understand the position of the governor and perhaps the Senate, but as the chair knows and many members here know, the state's public finance authority routinely sells bonds on behalf of cities for public infrastructure. And I would urge you to consider whether there's not a way to extend that capability based on local revenues to support a bond that the state would sell. There would be an implicit soft guarantee there, but it would not be a GO bond, in my opinion. And therefore, it would not encumber the state's assets in the same way that a GO bond would encumber the state's assets. I realize there's probably a constitutional question in there someplace. Mr. Michael is better equipped than I to answer that question. But I have heard some folks who are very active in the bond world say that it is not a state constitutional problem, and that, in fact, it could be done. So I would suggest that that could be considered as an option. And then a couple of other quick ideas. In a redevelopment scenario, which is the project I'm working on in Wayzata, there ought to be more time to allow the local marketplace to drive some of the redevelopment activity without triggering the hard penalties, if you will, of the redevelopment TIF district standards. For example, in my situation, we have some demolition issues to deal with. But if we do the demolition work right now and the project doesn't go forward and we have to come back and revisit the site, we've now undercut our position to qualify as a redevelopment district because of the very tight parameters that the state sets on the conditions that have to be present in order to proceed with a redevelopment district. I can go into greater detail, but I don't want to take your time, frankly, to do that today. I can talk with Mr. Michael about it. You talked about pooling rules, Madam Chair. I think that's an excellent idea for communities that are fortunate enough to have excess TIF revenues to allocate. And I'm glad to hear that the legislature at least is interested in considering how to relax the redevelopment TIF standards to allow for some greater flexibility in trying to move forward with projects that are in the can and ready to go. Those are my comments, Madam Chair. I guess the big message that I would ask you to consider is the Starbonds idea. A number of states have adopted this concept, which is essentially a supersized TIF district tied to sales tax revenues. And there are obviously some standards and tests that you'd have to build into that concept to ensure that you are capturing new dollars, not recycled dollars, which is the old stadium argument that you've heard over the years. In my mind, there are ways to do that. Smart economists know how to do that, including the state's economists. And that would be a way to help stimulate projects that are ready to go, including the project I'm working on in the Rogers area. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. That's helpful. I think you threw some new things out there, waded into the public finance portion of the tax bill, and I think we were trying to not go there in an early jobs bill, but given that...
take advantage of that.
Well, no, I would like to learn more, because my understanding is a couple states have tried the sales tax TIF, and either it's not going so well or they've reversed it. But I do think you're right in highlighting, you know, the key is what's the increment.
Right.
And I'll just be honest that generally the purveyors and advocates of these sort of proposals, whether it's this or anyone else, sort of overinflate, in my estimation, the increment and under-recognize what would have happened anyhow in the economy. So, you know, we'd have to get our heads around a third party who would try to provide that data, because that's a weakness. You know, the state, in fact, does have some great data there in the sense that we know sales tax receipts by zip code.
Right.
So there are some things we could explore there. I think we need some time to kind of look at that, but that's my concern, is it becomes, you know, an overinflated argument for what the increment is there. But I appreciate that. I would just, while you're here, I just thought I'd ask Mr. Michael, because I don't quite recall. In last year's tax bill, we passed some flexibility in the five-year rule, didn't we? I think we did that.
Our district followed that, unfortunately.
Right. What was that?
Yes. There was a general extension of the five-year rule. I can't remember whether it was 3 years that was added on for districts that were created within a certain window of time. I'd have to look up what but last year there was a response on that. It may be that I'm sure that'll have to be revisited depending upon how quickly the market frees up. It may be that that'll have to be extended by additional years.
Mr. Michael's right, Madam Chair. In my case, the Wayzata District was established after that trigger date.
And I think Representative Lanning, Demmer, and Reinert will recall, you know, we tried to really last year, as the work TIF group, we tried to be flexible and just sort of recognizing with the economic slowdown, we just free up some rules. And we did do that last year. I think it was fairly lost on people that was in there. But, you know, we're revisiting it today, so that's good. So appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Questions for Mr. Coyle? Okay, thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That. Others?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I'm a lawyer in Minneapolis at Fagree & Benson. My practice, like Mr. Coyle's, is primarily real estate development and frequently projects that have some form of governmental assistance. Two or three of the projects you've heard about from Mr. Collins and you'll hear about from others are projects where I'm the project development lawyer. I would echo the comments that several others have made already. What we face today in this marketplace is an almost complete impossibility of financing. Whereas before we were able to do projects in this 75 to 80 or 85% loan-to-value ratio during the construction period, what we're facing now is requirements to come up with 50% equity, and at those kind of levels, virtually no development has that level of equity available. And unfortunately, in many of these projects, the tax increment is already required to deal with four or five reasons why we have tax increment in the first place, that we want to deliver something that the market's not paying for, low-income housing, or we have really peculiar site problems like bad soil conditions, or we have existing blighted buildings that, in spite of being blighted, have more value than greenfield sites, and so you have to buy them out and have a land write down. So unfortunately, without incremental tax increment, I think the ability of tax increment to solve these problems is frankly fairly limited. I do think some of these ideas are possibly beneficial and could work, but as Mr. Ranieri said, and as I heard this morning from the St. Paul Port Authority, there really isn't excess tax increment in most of the major cities where a large share of these projects could happen to move from one project to another and consequently provide that additional bridging financing. I think that of the specifics that you have, probably the most valuable change would be allowing the kind of developments that are now precluded in economic development districts, because in those districts you don't need to show blight, and if we could expand it to cover office developments and normal commercial developments rather than just manufacturing, I do think it could be beneficial for a number of projects. I also think that this idea of allowing the TIF funding to be used more creatively could actually partially solve the lending problem, because one of the big issues with the lending is not only the lower loan-to-value ratio, but the incredible fear that even at those levels, the project for some reason won't work. And so I think if the tax increment could also be used as a, and maybe this language is already broad enough to do this, I think it's a kind of a technical question we should think about with Mr. Michael and the committee. If the language is broad enough on some circumstances where TIF would be available and is not otherwise being used to provide a loan guarantee or a partial loan guarantee, probably coupled with a repayment obligation. Now, almost all these TIF deals that we do have what we call the look back or the participation, where if at the end of the day the developer makes a better than normal internal rate of return or sells the property at the end of the day and the overall return is better, a piece of the TIF gets paid back. So if we could have a provision where we could use that for backing up the loans in terms of operating deficits in the early years, I think that with a participation, obviously cities would negotiate that, I think that would be very helpful and might provide a way to get some of this financing to actually happen. I have two or three projects I could bring specifically to the attention of the committee. I believe that an industrial project where the developer has recently accomplished a very major contract with a large grocery chain that would require them to build an entire new facility. And we have found that even though we were able to finance our last industrial facility at about an 85% loan-to-value ratio, now the lender wants to be between 60 and 70%. That's a project which it's not a TIF district yet. I think that project could be in the ground within the next 6 months. And frankly, these tools aren't very helpful for it, because the real issue there is equity, unless we could talk the city, and maybe with the new use of tax increment for equity we can, into allowing some of that tax increment to bridge the gap. I have a historical project which already would qualify to be a redevelopment tax increment district. That project, as Mr. Collins said, the developer would like to go forward as a first phase of a much larger project. And in that case, we're talking about $12 million of development, but the ultimate value of the property is probably more like about $4 million because it's historic and it has huge development costs in order to renovate it. I think that what these illustrate is that equity is a big part of the problem. And so I would actually urge the committee, I recognize the problems with the Loan Guarantee Fund and the concern about taking high risk in terms of actually expending material state dollars up front to create the fund, and then the risk of the loans not working out without a real source. One thought might be that the state could consider a loan guarantee fund backed by tax increment on the projects and capture the tax increment from the projects, which I think was part of the stimulus bill that we had last time, as a way of recouping some of the exposure. And the other possibility might be to capture sales tax on building materials on those projects as a way of funding the guarantee. I mean, we have no activity in this sector, frankly, right now. And so while it is true that you always have the parsing issue of is it new or is it not new, if we have limited time periods on these programs to 2 or 3 years, I think then we are pretty safe in saying we're engendering new development, and by the time it actually gets here, many of the market concerns, I think, will actually be resolved. The final thing I hope the committee will consider, I know this is in your bill, the historic tax credit. I think this could have a very powerful effect in inducing investment in Minnesota by tax credit investors. Those credits are not allocated by the states. I would also urge you to consider a state companion new market credit. The state does not also get a specific allocation of new market credits, and the 7 or 8 states that have adopted these new market credit programs are inducing the national investors to come there to do the double up, because you get a lot more benefit as an investor, and I would say we would get more bang for our buck. I realize it's not as good as appropriating money, but these credits don't cost us anything in the first time period. They come into play when the project goes into service. And I also think we ought to consider, even though we have allocations, low-income credits where about 15 states have them. So I'd be happy to answer questions. A couple of the developers that I work with are here, too, and we certainly could provide more information later.
Okay, thank you. We have 20 minutes. How many people still want to testify? Okay, we're going to try to get done by 12. Otherwise, we're going to have to come back. So come on down. And members, maybe in the interest of time, that was Mr. Herman's testimony was helpful. I will say there were a number of ideas put out there that were spending items for the tax committee, and the TIF items, as folks know, are zeros on the spreadsheet. So that's kind of what we're trying to work here with the $5 billion deficit coming up, you know, thinking about not having people pay their sales tax, and, you know, that becomes finding money for the legislature as well. So I think just politically they're probably not possible in this climate, but things in the arena that are in the world of the doable is probably what we're most interested in. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, excuse me, my name is Greg Miller. I'm the president of a commercial real estate development company called Interstate Partners. Mike McGuire is the mayor of Eagan. I'm going to speak to one project that I'm involved in, and then there's another project in Eagan that the mayor is going to speak to try to keep things moving. We are the redeveloper of the South St. Paul Stockyards. We bought that project in 2006, leased it back to the Stockyards, and it's in a TIF district. We already have TIF authority. We demolished the South St. Paul Stockyards in 2008, worked with the city of South St. Paul to put in a new public infrastructure. We've been trying to get a building built there. I've built 16 buildings in the Twin Cities in the last 10 years. Have never had trouble getting financing, good relationships with our banks, not in default on anything. Have developed 100 acres working with the city of Eagan, so we know what we're doing in this arena. Yesterday I talked to my 24th bank to try to get the construction financing for our first building in the Stockyards. Okay. It's a 126,000 square foot office warehouse. It's all designed, ready to go, shovel ready, in a tax increment district. And I was told that, as you've heard from Mr. Collins, as you've heard from the attorneys, equity, equity, equity. I don't get the equity out of the TIF notes until I build the project. You know, that doesn't do me any good. So I've got this TIF authority that's ticking away that I can't use. So the economics of the project are getting worse. We're putting significant equity into this project already, and personal guarantees and blah, blah, blah. And the bankers are just, every time more equity, more equity. If you can lengthen the districts, if you can do anything to enable us to monetize these funds, Mr. Herman's comment, I own two TIF notes from a development in Eagan. I'm trying to borrow against those TIF notes to get equity for my South St. Paul project. And believe me, the banks are locked down and froze. And anything you can do to help us generate more equity for these developments. I've got R.J. Ryan and AmCon and Roshan contractors that want to build these buildings for us. So,
Mr. Miller, I just wanted to tell you, just so you know, that those of us who serve on the TIF working group, actually, the last time we heard the Stockyards issue, there was no developer. So if you have new information, we'd like to hear more.
No developer. I've owned it for 3 years.
Well, there was a proposal that came forward, and we'd like to learn more, you know, maybe offline. We don't have the time to hear all the nuance of the project, but I'm interested in that because we looked at something else last year, I believe it was. I don't know if Representative Demmer or Lanning can recall, or Reiner, or was the year before. This is new information, what you're telling us right now, that I was aware of. So I'd like to learn more about that.
Madam Chair, it's an active development. We've been trying for 12 months to get construction financing for the building. So.
That'd be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Welcome.
Madam Chair, always a pleasure to be in front of this committee and to chat with you. Appreciate you having us. I'm Mike McGuire. I'm the mayor of the city of Eagan. I'm also the chair of the Municipal Legislative Commission, and I'm joined here by John Hohenstein, our economic development director in Eagan. I'm a simple caveman mayor, so if there are any detailed questions, he's the guy to go to. As I mentioned, I'm the chair of the Municipal Legislative Commission, and I'm going to speak today primarily about and briefly about a project specific to Eagan, but I know each of our 14 communities in the Municipal Legislative Commission are at or fear being in a similar situation to Eagan's in terms of Cedar Grove. So focusing on that, I think you're all familiar with the Cedar Grove redevelopment project in Eagan. As a reminder, in Eagan, we are very prudent, I think, about our use of TIF financing and TIF districts. We agree with you, Madam Chair, that the job creation comes primarily from the private sector. However, where we have issues of TIF, there's a partnership between the public and the private, and in Eagan, we've been trying to develop that partnership in the Cedar Grove area. We have a Cedar Grove redevelopment district. We are 7 years into a 25-year district, and at this point have made some significant upfront investments to try to get development to move there. We are on the cusp of being able to move forward with our first phase of redevelopment, have two specific projects, one multifamily apartment, another a pair of adjoined hotels that is entirely private. The challenge that we have is that we are close but not quite there and still have a gap that we can't seem to close. I think the big challenge that we have is that we are 7 years into a 25-year district. That clock is ticking, as a city, we're on the sidelines of our own TIF district because it would be inadvisable with that clock ticking to make additional stimulant investments to close that gap. And if the window or the clock were reset, as Mr. Coyle suggests, I think we'd be in a position where we could loosen up and make the final investments to try to close that gap and move those projects forward. If we had the ability to get that gap closed and could feel more advisedly smart about making those stimulant investments in the district, we could have those two projects going forward in 2011 as the land is already clear and we own it and just need to close the deals. But the challenges are, quite frankly, the financing. And I appreciate the five-year change in last year's bill. The challenge is for cities like ours, we started this district well before the Great Recession, although I'm not entirely sure what's so great about it. The market simply collapsed. So the clock is ticking and we're unable to move it forward. We've already made the investments within the 5 years, and our concern is that at this point we're leveraged into it enough that with the 25-year clock ticking, it doesn't seem wise to continue to leverage more investment into it unless we have a longer window.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Did you have anything to add?
I do not, unless there are questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, we appreciate that, and I think you're in the situation a lot of people are finding themselves in right now. So are there questions for the Mayor of Eagan? If not, we're trying to get through all the testimony so we don't have to come back after the floor.
Thank you.
Others who'd like to talk to us. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Bruce Nordquist. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Apple Valley.
Okay.
Also, the homestead of 70 years for my family is in Representative Carlson's district. However, I think I left the homestead before he started his long years of service.
Wow.
What I'm here to talk about first is to try to respond to your bill. And the reason why it's important for Apple Valley is that we are now part of the regional transit system. Bus rapid transit began the first week of January, and we have a corridor of transit that links to our downtown that provides opportunity for service. And it's quite clear that in two areas ripe for redevelopment and change, that the language you speak of related to the economic development district changes to provide flexibility for office and commercial would be the quickest way to generate development, generate jobs. What I'm concerned about in the compact development district definition is that it refers to 70% coverage and one-third of a mile away from the Apple Valley Transit Center, which already is parking 750 people a day, is the an area we call the Central Village. And there's packages being passed out that maps out and explains all of the details. And in that Central Village area, we have about 40 acres unfinished. About a third of the project, 60 acres, is done. But it's that 40 acres I'm concerned about. It's raw land. But it's improved land because the roads, the sidewalks, the lighting, everything is in place, and the development is taking forever. The City Council for Apple Valley approved a 130-unit senior rental project in December of 2007. 25 months later, last month, it finally closed with some new equity investors, and they were able to move forward with that development. Well, we have similar developments on that raw land, and that one piece really excludes us from being able to participate, and that would be a concern for an area that's a third of a mile away from a major transit facility in the South Metro area. I think, second, there is a concern that without an adjustment to the floor area ratio or the square footage for development, that three times, maybe more than what the planning industry suggests, it's perhaps two times would be the increase of density. Of course, we can advocate more. Those are the policies in Apple Valley. But we're a little concerned that that three times the density might be a little bit too much. And want you to, and I also throw out in these handouts some other points to discuss. It isn't just the floor area ratio to look at, it's housing densities. Easily we can create 20 to 35 units per acre in these developments and have them also benefit from a transit-oriented type of tax increment district. But for immediate, I think the only thing I want to say is that for immediate response in this marketplace and the time frames you're talking about, where the financial markets are cannot even perform within the deadlines you're creating, to relax economic development will give us the jump start that we need. And thank you for letting me share this information. I'm certainly available to chat with anybody directly if there's any questions that my package materials raised.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nordquist. This is helpful, and we'll definitely take a look. Appreciate you being here, really. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Amy Baldwin with the City of Brooklyn Park Economic Development, and with me today is Ron Christensen of the Christensen Corporation. We're here to talk about a project that is ready to go in Brooklyn Park and would benefit from the expanded use of the surplus increment. The project itself is approximately 200,000 square feet of an expansion of an existing precision manufacturing facility in Brooklyn Park. The expansion would be completed over two phases, and the company itself is called Excellent, which is a medical device company that provides outsourcing solutions to the medical device industry. Its cardiology headquarters are located in Brooklyn Park, and the division designs and manufactures implants and instruments for the medical device industry, specifically for the cardiac rhythm management sector. Sales of the company are approximately $60 million per year. The expansion project that we're referring to today is a $33 million project. However, in working through the budgets for the project, it's come up short about $4.8 million in gap. New Market Tax Credit Equity can bring some of that equity in, but still showing a $1.2 million gap in the project. Under the current economic development TIF law, the project would only generate about half of what is needed to cover that gap through tax increment financing. Planning for the project has been well underway, and we've researched many ways to try to reduce that gap and have been working closely with the developer and the company on this expansion. The company currently has about 400 employees. The expansions would generate another 200 jobs in the construction side, and as well as 125 permanent jobs with the expansion. The company currently is competing with Chinese manufacturing and outsourcing of the activities that they provide, but they've been working with the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program and receiving a grant to implement some lean process improvement programs to help address some of those concerns and make them a viable business for the state and region. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Just want to keep it brief and provide an information on a project that is ready to go. It will be under construction by July of 2011.
Thank you. Did you want to add?
No.
Okay, great. And by the way, your city has done a really great job of keeping us in the loop on this, and I think is the origination of the excess increment idea, so we appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Waldron, City Administrator, Oakdale, Bob Streeter, our Community Development Director. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Madam Chair, you're very familiar with this project and have been through the mall with us and helped us out last year. We're back again to talk about the old vacated Oakdale Mall. Quite clearly, we have a project, we have the jobs, we have the developer. Rick Collins is with us, who testified with you before. They'll be doing the development with us if we can close the gap. So we're prepared to move forward with the mall redevelopment, and Bob can just give you a thumbnail sketch of where we're at this point. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have a project. It's 100,000 square feet of commercial and 220 units of housing. We have two developers actually partnering, Ryan Companies and Wellington Management. We have a site that's under control, but we have a gap. We have $12 million of project costs, and we have about $9.3 million in revenues. But we have a solution. What we're asking the committee to consider is to extend an existing redevelopment district 8 years. It will generate $2.5 million, create 80 jobs, not to mention the 22.5 man years of construction. So if you could see your way to extend that district for us, we can move ahead with this project in 2011.
Okay, thank you, and thanks for being concise. And
yes.
Still at it.
We're listening.
Okay, thank you so much.
You knew the project.
Are there others? Okay, if not, you know, I think what the committee is going to need, and I know some of these folks were here. Oh, yes, please, come forward. I do want to say, because people are going to have to get to the floor, but come forward. You know, when we hear the full jobs bill, we're going to need to hear from the historic credit people in a lot of detail, because we're going to want to spend time on that. We're going to have to work on the angel credit in that language. The building trades and the labor unions, we want their perspective. I also can say, having talked with NAOP and Bowman and others, you know, there are folks concerned about, you know, competitive disadvantage when some folks are going to get a benefit that others did not have. And so how far in you're going to try to fix the market, you know, I don't know. But I think we're going to want to hear from all those people. I know that the Mall of America was in the room. I don't see them now. I have provisions in there in the bill. So we're going to need kind of the full-blown everybody testifying when we actually put this thing together. But we're just trying to hear more ideas today that we maybe not have not thought of. So welcome. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Scott Quick. I represent the International Motorsports Entertainment and Development Corporation. With me today, I have Jim Farnham, our president and CEO of our company. We're principals in our project, and I understand we're under some time constraints. You have other obligations and so on. So we'll just touch on the high points. We have a project that has been in existence for about three years or so now. We've now focused our attention on a community that's receptive to the type of development that we're anticipating bringing in. A few of the key points that I want to touch on today was jobs. We have a project. We have a site now. We'll be engaging with the community to lock down our property acquisition and so on. But more importantly, we have a new project that's going to bring new tourism dollars to the five-county metro. Our aspiration was to develop a project like this in the five-county metro that meets our criteria, and we're finally there. Our job will create about 4,000 or 4,100 new jobs, construction jobs, with the construction of our facility over a 30-month period. And I don't know if you anybody watched the Daytona 500 race here this weekend, this past weekend, but the city of Daytona as an example, and we use them as somewhat of a model because the level of construction that we're talking about with our facility somewhat emulates a track or a facility of that size, and the economic impact to the city of Daytona was in excess of, I think, $1 billion this year. The size of our track is just basically a 7/8 mile asphalt type oval, a training facility, a 2.5 mile road course, exhibition centers, and significant infrastructure that I think that our assessment was with the construction of our facility includes about 2.5 million man hours of construction time and about 4,100 jobs. Our intention here today is to make you aware of this. We're engaging the community that that we're working with TIF considerations. Although part of our project is privately funded at this point, we will engage in some of those things as we're moving forward. One thing that really caught my attention with some of your stipulations, or some of those that I saw, was the July 1 date for construction or build. We're finally at that point with our project now where we plan to have shovels in the ground by that date. And so, again, our intention was to make you aware of this project, and you will hear more about it as time goes on.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it, because I'm not aware of it. Questions for these folks here? Yes, Representative Downey.
No, not for them.
Okay. Anyone else?
No.
I know we all have to get to the floor. I'm glad you, I apologize. I didn't know you were, there was one more left, so I'm glad we got you in. Thank you for being here.
Well, we'd love
today.
To come back when you have more time.
We will have more time later.
Okay.
It'll be grindingly slow later. Right now, we don't have so much time, but thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick request. As all of these people come before our committee, and maybe you're hearing about things through other channels, could the staff start creating kind of an inventory of the specific projects that might fit these criteria
idea.
So we can just kind of keep tabs on
that's a great idea.
How big
so,
this
Mr.
is?
Michael, did you catch that? Maybe we can give a running list, and then everyone, you know, we're used to in the TIF subcommittee getting all this stuff in great detail, and honestly, members have not been very interested. So we would like more people to get interested. This might be the year that we'll have everybody pouring through the documents. So that would be great. Okay, so thank you, members. We are adjourned.